This is Audible.
Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Conspiracy Against the Human Race, A Contrivance of Horror, by Thomas Ligotti, read by Eric Martin. Look at your body, a painted puppet, a poor toy of jointed parts ready to collapse, a diseased and suffering thing, with a head full of false imaginings. The Dhammapada. Preface. To avoid all possibility of false appearances, I should disclose up front to being a writer of supernatural horror stories. Strictly speaking, then, The Conspiracy Against the Human Race represents more than a slight exception to this practice. Nonetheless, certain listeners of the present book may view it as essentially belonging to the domain of the supernatural, the weird, the uncanny, and so forth. Although a work of nonfiction, its subtitle, A Contrivance of Horror, does seem to encourage such a conclusion. However, sometimes words have two or more meanings, and it is not unusual for writers to take advantage of this fact when giving a title to their handiwork. Thus, whether the term contrivance denotes my intended design for this volume or refers solely to its subject matter, the vast conspiracy I attempt to illuminate, is, for better or worse, a semantic blur. While the proximate origin of The Conspiracy Against the Human Race resides in an interview I gave in 2004, its true germ may be traced to a far earlier time in my life. False memories we all have, but I cannot help believing this one is true. It took place when I was 9 years old. I had been engaged in an argument with my father and mother concerning some incident now forgotten. This conflict ended when I charged out the front door of our family home. Lingering outside were some friends of mine who took note of my fury and asked me what was up. The first words I spoke were derogatory of my parents. "You shouldn't say that," admonished one of my friends. I could see that the others agreed. "Why not?" I responded in a defiant tone. And then the answer, "Because if it weren't for your mom and dad, you wouldn't be alive." I pondered the summary logic of this rebuke to the harsh words I had spoken about my parents. Something about it seemed flawed. Was I supposed to credit my progenitors with bringing me to life, as if I were Frankenstein's monster, a thing of inanimate parts into which they had breathed vitality? Had I been only a configuration of dead matter in another dimension prior to the success of their efforts to usher me into the realm of the living? Or had they somehow saved me, as did Jesus Christ by dying for my sins, a manner of speaking that never truly captured my imagination, no matter how many times I heard it reported during my years in Catholic school? Given that death loomed large in my religious training, such thoughts came naturally to my young mind. That heaven or hell awaited me after my demise was one article of faith I took quite seriously. But how could I have been a departed soul ahead of my coming to life? In its flight from cognitive dissonance, my childhood brain could not accept that I was just as dead before I lived as I would be when I ceased to breathe. It seemed ludicrous to me that death was a sort of vice that closed in on my life from both ends. All the same, I could not wholly dismiss the supposition. If not among the dead, then where had I existed before my parents rescued me? It must have been someplace very bad in my buddies' minds to provoke their chastisement of me for denigrating my begetters. Fortunately, my contemplation of the whole issue was quickly put aside so that I could play with my friends. Still, I remained preoccupied by the inescapable circumstance of death, especially after the assurances of religious doctrines gradually faded in me. Not much later, of course, I came to realize that my pre-existent life was not death, but simply non-existence. Yet whether that non-existence could be definitively established as good or bad, or not good or not bad, was a concern for those trained in philosophy and beyond my ability to negotiate. During my later teenage years, however, I began to question the relative value of not existing, as opposed to being alive, even if the former alternative was as unappealing a prospect for me as it is for practically everyone else. If only in principle, though, non-existence ultimately seemed the place to be. More to the point, it seemed the place to stay. This is a conspicuously dark opinion, and such opinions, strongly held, sometimes lead individuals to express them in words. The type of expression I pursued was that of writing supernatural horror stories, which I began contriving in the 1970s. Wisely, I destroyed almost all of the literary efforts of my apprentice years, allowing only one from the aforementioned decade to exist in a handwritten draft that I revised for more than a decade before I finally thought it fit to publish alongside others I produced throughout the 1980s. The title of my first story, in a chronological sense, is The Last Feast of Harlequin. The setting of the narrative is a small town, and its plot features a strange cult that exalts non-existence while observing a spiritual interdiction with respect to the breeding of human life. Other stories I had written, and would later write, were based on related themes, including The Shadow, The Darkness, in which one character speaks of a book titled An Investigation into the Conspiracy Against the Human Race. This book is described as being based on the non-existence, the imaginary nature of everything we believe ourselves to be, a conceit I develop throughout the sections to come. I almost gave the story in question the title The Conspiracy Against the Human Race, having no idea that years later I would compose a book of that name on a similar subject. Nothing written here is meant to suggest that the volume at hand had a destiny of some kind or followed a fated narrative. There are too many false starts and stops, derailments, and plain old complications throughout a person's life in its overarching aspects to regard it as anything but one damn thing after another, as they say. All I may claim is that the selected events coordinated in this preface are connected in some way to the production of The Conspiracy Against the Human Race, as well as being somewhat revelatory of its author's peculiar temperament, which is left entirely for listeners to judge according to their own.